You're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224, CQ, Anahola, K284, AL, Haleiwa. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. This is your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regenerations Botanical Garden, and on today's show, we'll fill our senses with wonder at the Princeville Botanical Garden right here on the beautiful garden island of Kauai. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriter.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Nikki Sussman has been building island koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kasila. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your aqua hydro soil growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, and more in their 1,700 square foot warehouse at Pui Industrial Park, Lahui. Family owned and operated. Open Monday through Saturday, 246-4769, 246-GROW.
And yes, we do love to grow. We love to grow inside, outside, within ourselves. We love to assist in all the ways that we can to make this island flourish and be abundant and enjoy all the fruits of the land. We want to thank David Kuhn for the birds, the native forest birds of Kauai. Of course, if we're good gardeners and farmers, we're taking care of that precious resource. More of his beautiful recordings can be found at soundshawaiian.com. And we want to let you know that it's coming up time soon again for the Spring Membership Drive 2016. The dates are Thursday, May 12th to Wednesday, May 25th. And some great opportunities. If you are an early bird or sustaining membership donor, by May 11th, you will be entered into a drawing for a two-night stay at Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. And you can call our studio line, or rather our office line, at 826-7774. You can donate on our website as well, kkcr.org. And there's also an opportunity to become a wave rider. If you're a listener of the station, you're familiar with that. It's a perfect way to get your business or event message out to our listeners. If you become a wave rider, you'll have your brief message aired during every two-hour program for the duration of the 14-day pledge drive, which tallies up to over 100 mentions of your business or your message. So you can call 826-7774 for more information, and you can even have some assistance in coming up with that perfect message, too. So please consider that as we head toward our spring membership drive, which is going to help us stay on the air and continue to bring you In the Garden on the Farm and lots of other great programs here at KKCR. And we're excited today to be focusing in on botanical adoration. And there's a really beautiful example of that, in my opinion, up on the North Shore we're going to be visiting. But first, we're going to start with our celestial session, our look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our daily, weekly harvesting, planting, and other gardening and farming activities. Starting with our Hawaiian moon, brought to us today by the 2016 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, thanks to the Hanalei Watershed Hui, as well as many other organizations collaborating with that. And the U.S. Navy Observatory is bringing us the precise timing of the moon today. The Hawaiian moon of the day is Ole Kukahi. We're here in the first Anahulu of, or the first Hawaiian moon week here, and so we have a waxing moon getting larger and larger every 24-hour period. Ole Kukahi will rise over Kauai in just a few minutes here at 12.09 p.m. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 6.52 p.m. this evening, and she will set at 1.33 a.m. tomorrow morning. 50% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated, making today the first quarter moon, which happens actually precisely at 5.59 p.m. Ole Kukahi is the first of four Ole moons in the first week of the Hawaiian moon month, and no planting is recommended today. Weeding is especially recommended. We've had some nice rains here on the North Shore, which help loosen the roots of our weeds, so it's a good time for that. I was out in the food forest this morning pulling some honohono grass, some small guinea grass that is beginning to get a little bit of a grab, a foothold on the beautiful rings of mulch that we've put around our fruit trees. And I want to invite people out to the food forest each and every Saturday from 8:30 to noon and then 2:30 to 5, where we continue our love of that place. We're seeing trees that have never bloomed before, including our two ohia'ai, or mountain apple trees, one of them a traditional Hawaiian sourced variety and one a special Malaysian variety. So following the flowers are the fruits, we're hoping, and excited to be enjoying those soon. We're also getting copious flowers on our citrus right now. So consider joining me in, if you have citrus trees, having a look for the crab spiders, which are still sticking around. Their populations do seem to be declining somewhat as the season continues, but they will capture the bees that are trying so hard to get to that sweet nectar. And the more that we keep the bees out of the webs of the spiders, the more fruit we'll probably get, and we can imagine those bees returning safely to their hive as they make the sweet honey. And we're having a lot of fun out there. Please consider joining us up in Kalihiwai. If you need directions, you can go to kauaifoodforest.org. We're also getting ready for the sixth, I believe, annual Earth Day Rising event. It's going to happen at the Malama Kauai Community Farm at Waikoa Plantation. And there's lots of really pretty cool stuff happening at that event. This is hosted by Malama Kauai. It's being held on Sunday, April 24th. It's an all-day Lahonua, the Earth Fest. Doors open at 8:30. And there's lots of workshops and panels on sustainable living, agriculture, and conservation. Keiki and farm activities, a clothing swap tent, seed and plant giveaway hosted by Regenerations Botanical Garden. We're going to be putting a lot of plants that we didn't quite get together in time for our seed and plant exchange to give away. Now, just a point of clarity there, we're not holding a seed exchange, so we're not encouraging people to bring seeds and plants, because that is, as for our many volunteers, or for our Corps volunteers who assist in the seed and plant check-in at the seed exchange. That's one of the most labor-intensive portions of the seed exchange, is receiving the material, making sure it's pest and disease-free. So we're not going to do that at Earth Day Rising, but we are going to prepare plants and seeds for a giveaway. That'll be a lot of fun. And there's going to be free county compost bin distribution happening, courtesy of Malama Kauai. Lots of vendors, food, music, just a whole fun day of events. And next week, we're going to be joined by Keoni Kealoha, Executive Director of Malama Kauai, along with Megan Fox, and she is doing so much at Malama Kauai. I'm not sure exactly what her official title is, but she pretty much makes that operation run in a huge way as well, in cooperation with Keoni and the other staff there at Malama Kauai. So we're going to have them in next week to talk about Earth Day Rising, but also to hear about many of the other agriculturally based programs that they do at Malama Kauai through the School Garden Network. They have an internship program coming up for high school students in agriculture, and some other great stuff to share. So please consider tuning in next week for that show. And I want to let people know, too, I've digressed a bit from our celestial session, so perhaps I'll return there now, and I'll let you know via the, we have an interesting celestial event coming up starting on Friday. This, thanks to the Bernice Pauahi Bishop Museum Observatory. And here we are, April 15th, Friday, through the end of May 2016, Mars is at its peak. And here I'm reading off of the website from Bishop Museum. Mars, which shone very feebly at 1.7 magnitude when it returned to our skies in late summer 2015, will shine more brightly in spring 2016 than any time since 2005. The red planet shines at minus 1 magnitude as of mid-April 2016 and should look very striking in evening skies. In mid-April, look for Mars rising in the east at 10 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time, is due south at 3:30 a.m., and partway down the western sky at daybreak. Mars hits peak brightness on May 22nd, when it shines at minus 2.1. It's roughly the magnitude of Jupiter, usually the sky's second biggest dot. Mars is actually in opposition on that day of May 22nd. When a planet is in opposition, there is a straight line between the Sun, the Earth, in the middle, and the planet. During opposition, a planet rises at sunset, is high at midnight, and sets at dawn, as Mars will do in late May 2016. Usually, an out planet shines at its brightest at opposition, as Mars does on the 22nd of May. So this concept of opposition is something that is paid attention to, not only because of the brightness of the planets and the ability to enjoy them more greatly, but also by the biodynamic system of observations and prescriptions on our planting and harvesting and other activities as well. And we have Heaven on Earth starts to thank for our celestial session reading related to the biodynamic look at things today. And thanks to Robin, who lets us know that we are now in the descending phase of the moon, and that means planting time. Wednesday, today the moon is in the constellation of Gemini, an air sign, making a good time to work with our flowering plants, and marigolds, sunflowers, zinnia, cosmos, etc., will be well planted at this time of year, because they'll be able to go through significant vegetative growth and then really be able to pump out flowers for a long period of time during this summer period. Thursday, tomorrow, the moon is in Gemini until about 2 p.m. Then the moon enters Cancer, a water sign, and it's time to work with our leafy plants until Friday. And then Saturday through Sunday, the moon is in Leo, a fire sign, And that is a fruit time, especially good to plant fruits like cucumbers, tomatoes, and peppers. So these are plants that suffer some from the fungal diseases, the powdery mildew, and there's different things that take these plants that really prefer to be dry in the garden. So if we're working with the biodynamic rhythms, the hope, at least, is that these celestial influences will keep our plants that prefer that a bit drier and hopefully less disease-prone during this time period. Then next week, Monday and Tuesday, the moon is in Virgo, an earth sign, which means it's a good time to work with our root plants. Radishes, beets, turnips would be good. So I've looked at the Hawaiian moon calendar as well, tried to find some of the good times, or sometimes it turns out that the Hawaiian moon reading and the biodynamic reading are closely aligned. Well, this week it doesn't seem so much that that's the case. However, we're looking at Saturday and Sunday here. This is Huna moon, and it's calling for ipu and root plants, although the biodynamic calendar is calling for fruits. Well, ipu, the Hawaiian gourd, is a fruit, so that would be a good traditional plant to plant Saturday and Sunday, Sunday especially, I would say. And then Monday and Tuesday, especially at the end, Tuesday would be a good time for planting our root crops, coming into the full moon, and then especially coming up in a couple of days after that, it's going to be a good time for our kalo. So looking forward to getting ready to plant that. Another plant that I have some difficulty with, given the leaf blight that kalo is susceptible to. And I've been watching it for a while, and I think I've figured out that the missing piece for me with my kalo production or my kalo plantings in terms of keeping them healthy with that leaf blight, I'm thinking it's compost. I just have not been using enough compost on my garden. It's a precious resource, and I don't always have enough. Well, I have quite a bit of compost from making it all last year, and I've just noticed in various places where the kalos popped up in some compost, they're completely healthy plants. So I'm thinking it's a matter of keeping those plants healthy and strong, and that's my plan at any rate, to try once again, yet again, with the kalo, is give them plenty of compost. And when I think about the times I've been successful with kalo, I certainly have given them plenty of compost. So hopefully we'll have some good results there. We've got some special traditional Hawaiian varieties that still persist in our plantings, and I'm excited to multiply them and hopefully make them available to the community coming up at our seed and plant exchange sometime in the fall or winter coming up this year. So turning now to our feature presentation, over the past month, I've been very grateful to carve out the time and go and visit the good people over at the Princeville Botanical Garden. Now, when I first became aware of this garden, it was called Ahonui Botanical Garden, but the name changed to Princeville. And yet, although the name changed, the management of the garden has continued the same, stewarded very well by Bill and Lucinda Robertson, and then in strong collaboration with Master Gardener Michael Wise. I've often tried to get Michael on the show, and he's one of those gardeners that doesn't really drop into the office too much, so it was more about me going out to him. And once again, I want to thank KKCR and all of our fine supporters for providing us with the equipment that provides the opportunity to do field recordings. So I was able to visit the Princeville Botanical Garden a few times over the past month. I got to join in on a tour with Heidi, who did a tremendous job, and then once again with Michael in the garden and Bill. And then I sat down with Bill, Lucy, and Michael to talk about the Princeville Botanical Garden and made a mashup of these various visitations. And as I continue to learn the technology here, I hope that I've stitch this all together well for you. So I hope you'll enjoy this visit, virtual visit to the Princeville Botanical Garden, and I'll have more to say about it when we're finished with the recording. So sit back and enjoy this visit to Princeville Botanical Garden. And just about to pull this up here. All right, let's see if we've got it.
Living in San Diego for many years, and always we're looking for someplace more rural. And when we got to this particular property, and we were down by Anini Creek, and there was just this feeling of like, this is it. This is what you've been looking for. We always wanted a property with a creek on it. And I'm not usually very comfortable in wild feeling places, but I felt so comfortable. And even though there's wild pigs out there, I just felt so safe and comfortable, and it was it. This was it. And another time after we bought the property, I was coming back walking from a neighbor's, and there were all these cows in the pasture, and I was just so excited to be living next to cows and rural and yet so close to convenience. It was just a miracle to me. The North Shore of Kauai is unlike any other place I've been. It's like, I don't know, if you've had a favorite lover or teacher and you haven't seen them for a long time, and every time you come back to Kauai, you feel like you just couldn't remember what it was like. You just can't remember that person. And that's what it's like coming back to Kauai every time. It's so green, and the air embraces you, and the ocean is so alive. It's just magical here.
We're in a lookout overlooking the Anini Stream Valley. And as I just mentioned, this is by far, for me, it's what really gets my juices up for this garden, is having this water feature and having Michael and our staff really make a wonderland, you know, down here around Anini Stream. It's magical. I always tell this story of Michael. I grew up in Southern California, and in the 1950s when Walt Disney started Disneyland, and Walt Disney enjoyed taking people through a different experience. So when you walked through Disneyland and you left, it was like you went into another time and space. And even to this day, when you go to Disneyland, people have that experience, whether they're young or old. When Michael builds a garden and he creates a garden, he takes you into a different time and space of the plant kingdom, the plant world. And what he's done to this particular land on the North Shore of Kauai is people, when they walk through the garden, they're sort of mesmerized and they're touched deeply with the beauty, with the passion and the foresight of the plantings that have taken place here. It brings tears to our eyes to watch people go through this experience and come out and see the way that they've been touched.
Tears of joy.
Tears of joy, yes. And, you know, the people who have been part of this garden and creating the garden over the last 15 years also share in that magical wonderland that's been created here. And, you know, many people have been here for over a decade, you know, a few of our key people. The whole creation of this has just been very touching, something that we never planned, you know, when we started doing this back in 2001.
This place began as your home, and then you began to transform the landscape here. And it has gone through a tremendous transformation on many levels. One of those levels is the ground level, and we are on a site here that is fairly extreme topography. There's some really steep areas. And one of the most notable and, I think, beneficial things of the land is that it has a beautiful perennial stream that flows through it. Mm-hmm. So these streams, they carve these stream valleys. It's a massive undertaking that you've taken to reshape the land before the plants even got put in. Before reshaping the land, there was a tremendous amount of control of invasive plants mm-hmm. that's happened.
There were probably these 20-foot high weeds, we call them Christmas berries, and they were down in the valleys, and there were a lot of guavas, all of these things very invasive, and so we had a team of people that actually hand-picked them out. They cut them, and then what we did is we put those long pieces of wood on their sides so that there would be no erosion. In Kauai, you can only clear a half acre at a time, so we didn't clear it. We left a lot of big kukui and mango and coconut, so we had to make these stacks of wood so that when the rains came, which they do, we can get a lot of rain on the North Shore, which makes it so green, then the water wouldn't wash away any soil, because soil is very precious here.
Mm-hmm. In addition to the stacking, you've actually returned a traditionally inspired technique of using large stones mm-hmm. to create terraces which hold the land together and contribute incredible beauty to the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill and I are, I guess you'd call us rockaholics. Mm-hmm. We love huge boulders. There was a huge bowl on the property, and I always, the moment we came to this property, I saw that in terraces. And so we used some local big boulders, and we laid out hoses and ropes in curvy fashion so it would look just really natural and follow the line of the slope. And we had an amazing fellow come and help us, and he had to use a big caterpillar, those big excavators, and it was as if that excavator was just an extension of his arm. He was so good with it and did mm-hmm. such an artistic
This is
job.
Paul Bryan with Marty Bryan Landscaping. Paul was very instrumental with shaping some of our major terraces. Mm. Quite an artist.
Truly.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
I would say we're more a little bit more broadscape. We were not focusing on just natives. We were not focusing on research, and we definitely don't have a European-style garden. Like Allerton's pretty much mm-hmm. has a lot of European characteristics. We're broad spectrum of plants. As many endangered plants as we could get. I mean, like all the other botanical gardens on the island are doing the same thing. But we're a little bit more wild, we have a little bit more freedom because we don't have to research every single DNA molecule for every plant to make sure we have the correct one. So we get to be more playful, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And since we don't have like a firm direction for the garden, where it's more broad, and welcoming of everything possible. We're more like Allerton in that sense. They just have collections of all kinds of interesting plants. But we're a young garden. I mean, we're just page one.
Yep.
We got, the foundations are here, but that's about it.
Right.
And we have thousands and thousands of more plants we could be growing here. Present, we haven't got around to it yet. Hopefully someday.
You know, our size kind of limits us. You know, we have 9 acres here. If the gardens were able to purchase land that we're adjacent to, there's a 2,000 acre piece of land right next to us, and I've always thought about acquiring another 5 to 15 acres down in the same valley next to us.
that would give the gardens more space and room to, you know, continue in its collection.
Mm-hmm. We have a ton of room to plant. We don't have a lot of room for large people. We have a lot of room for mid-range shrubs down to small people. Plus, we got room for probably 100,000 more orchids or 200,000 more orchids. We have room for all kinds of epiphytes.
Right. And you've got all these beautiful vertical growing surfaces on your mature trees.
And so, I mean, we're still scratching the surface of what's possible.
Mm.
You know, bit by bit.
When did the idea that this would actually become a botanical garden emerge from the project?
Well, Bill always was giving tours to friends, or Michael, you know, would bring friends, and finally somebody from the county actually came and they said, why don't you give tours, you know, they're really promoting agrotourism here on Kauai. And so Bill's brain lit up, Michael's saying yes. And at first I was a little resistant to have a lot of people I didn't know come through the garden, but what happened is they had the idea, and then our son came over and helped us design the tour, and it just kind of took off from there. And when we saw how much people enjoyed it, I think Michael likes to transform people's consciousness when they're in the garden, and I see that happen every tour. Every tour, they come out of there and they're just blown away. They're, you know, sometimes they're crying. You know, they come over to us and thank us so much, because this is a private property. We're opening our property to tourists from all over the world, and they're just really grateful. And I think that's one thing that makes our garden different from other gardens here on Kauai, is that it is a private property, and there's as many plants here, if not more, than some of the other gardens here. And so they're getting to see all this in a 9-acre tour instead of, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 acres. It's very condensed and full of flowers, because that's Michael's absolute passion. He could forget about the trees. He likes the flowers.
Well, if they're flowering trees, of course.
I know. But anyway, it's the smells and the sights, and they also, on the tour, they actually get to enjoy our fruits from the garden, you know, that's different citrus trees and mangosteen and, you know, just what's here. So I think that's what makes it different, is that it's so much condensed, and it's overwhelming, really, for the senses. So
that's the whole point, in a sense, for me, was to have it be overwhelming for their mind, so that they have to let go of their mind and get into their feeling, because it's not something you can really incorporate in a mental fashion. It's all visual and sensual. And so after X amount of time, it's usually the women and not the men, but the women are the first to drop out of the mental state and just get into the feeling, visual, sensory overload, as some people call it. And then the magic can work, the nature spirits, the divas, the spirit of the land can take them places that you couldn't take them to if you were blabbing away constantly. It transforms them with its beauty.
And I've noticed you've kept the signage, although there are some plants that are labeled, the signage is really low key, so it's not engaging that mental aspect. It allows you to just be in the landscape.
Right. Most of our tour guides know pretty much all the plants. And so if someone really wants to know the name of a plant, they can ask the tour guide, and usually they have the answer. So without having 10 million signs stuck everywhere, which can throw a person back into their brain, like you say, quite easily.
Right.
It's more just about the beauty and overwhelming the mental constructs with beauty rather than words.
This is a botanical collection, a phenomenal botanical collection. Michael gets obsessed with a plant, and all of a sudden we've got 10 or 20 of them. There's over 250 varieties of begonias. We've got about 12, but that's more than a lot of gardens will just put in two begonias, and that's the begonias. So So I'll be pointing out plants throughout the garden that you will meet continuously. Might help you eventually get their names, because we're not just going to pass it once. We're going to pass it a few times. I'm going to start right here with palms. We have over 70 varieties of palms in the gardens. All palm trees have flowers on them, like all plants. Flowers are called inflorescences. The inflorescence on palms, that's what these are, these seeds people always ask about. The cool thing about inflorescences is that you often have many, you always have many stages of the development of the seed going on at the same time. You can have a flower just opening, a flower being pollinated, and then the development of the seed. So these right here, mostly you're seeing seed development, different ages of seed. The smaller the seed, the younger. As they get older, they turn red, orange, and then fall on the ground. You will not see these inflorescences in commercial landscaping because they're so messy. Here at
This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio, and we're having an in-depth visit to the Princeville Botanical Garden. Right now, Heidi is pointing out some of the beautiful plants, and you'll hear some fun reactions from the visitors to the garden. And we're also spending time with Michael Wise, Master Gardener of the Princeville Botanical Garden, and we're also speaking with Lucy and Bill Robertson as well, the owners of the garden.
At the entrance to the driveway, these two trees right here on my right and left, these are monkey pod trees. Monkey pods are, of course, also introduced like most of the plants you're going to meet today. These trees are 8 years old.
Oh my God.
What? Whoa. That's how fast they grow. The two trees in front of them, related. This is the Fabaceae family, these trees. They create pods. The Fabaceae family are plants that create pods and have what we call a pinnate leaf formation, which is the leaves come evenly off the stem in a pattern like this. And when you see that leaf formation and seed pods, you know it is the pea family, the Fabaceae family, the two in front, powder puff mimosas, same family, sort of like minis of these. They even get the same flower on them when these flowers, that same pink, little pink flower.
We got to introduce to many varieties of plants from all over the world, ones that I had never seen even as a botanical enthusiast. How do you develop a relationship with these plants that nobody has ever seen before? You can't get them at the local nursery, that's for sure.
If you have to pay attention, you have to listen to what the plants are telling you. A little bit of research is always a good thing. You know, what country are they from? What's their average rainfall? You know, they need radical drainage because we get 100 to 120 inches of rain. Can we grow plants where the average rainfall is 5 or 6 inches? If we do certain things, quite often we get away with it. So the whole thing is the plants are the teachers. I'm the student. Mm-hmm. And I just have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And listen in class, so to speak. I do a little research, as I say, but I learn everything from the plants here. Everything I know about gardening in the tropics, I learned here from these plants. And I do have a million books, but the plants are way better teachers.
What about the other botanical professionals or enthusiasts, either in Hawaii or throughout the world, that actually connect you with the seed or the seedling or the cutting or that kind of thing?
I mean, where do we get some of these?
Yeah, and what's it like to have... What has that sort of community been like for you to depend on and be part of? The community of humans that are passing along these plants back and forth.
Oh, it's a great joy. I mean, there's so many little niche nurseries and plant nuts out there that are so passionate. And just the offerings that they have, you realize they're not in it for the money, because most of the people have never heard of the plants. One of my favorite nurseries, Sacred Succulents, half of the plants that he offers every 3 or 4 months, I've never heard of. I've got to go online and look these plants up. And there's a lot of small-time nurseries scattered across America. Unfortunately for us, most of the really great tropical nurseries are in Florida, and I don't order anything from Florida because of the possible pests and diseases and funguses and whatever. That's where the majority are located. So we have a much more broadscape selection of plants if we could have been ordering from Florida.
I was hoping you could say something about your establishment strategy for plants. Looking at the plantings here, it's obvious you've given these plants what they need to flourish and establish quickly and with great health to the trees.
I really don't have a strategy. First, I buy the plants. If I can get a hold of whatever endangered or rare, unusual or beautiful or medicinal plant, then it, you know, to me it's like, ah, finally, I got the plant of my dreams for that day. And then I take into view, you know, where is it going to be happy? Where is it going to thrive and flourish? And then I go from there. The big thing is just getting the plant. Mm-hmm. And knowing the light sources, you know, the winter light sources, the spring light source, the summer light source, what it's going to have to deal with as far as that goes.
I would imagine with such a steep valley that this is planted in, that the seasons would be quite dramatic in terms of their influence.
Insanely dramatic. It goes from no sun in the winter to full sun in the summer. So the plants, if they can't adapt to that, you know, insane spectrum, then we're in trouble. So you have to make sure, okay, is this really going to get shade all summer long? Beautiful, we'll put X in. Right. Is it going to get full sun and full shade during the course of the year? Okay, then we have to be a little more broadscape and hope that we can find the plants that are maybe semi-dormant in the winter and come back in the summer. And, of course, a lot of it's hit and miss, because I'm just a rank amateur as far as gardening goes. Truly, truly.
I protest to that. But when it comes to actually now it's time to prepare your planting hole and the soil, what is your strategy there?
As big as possible, as many hundreds of pounds of compost and mulch that we can possibly drag up. Something... On these slopes, a lot of the plants get 400 to 500 pounds of compost carried up on our backs per tree or per plant. Not everything, of course. If you're just planting a little tiny flowering person, they might not get that much. But
right.
Yeah, everything. There was nothing that grew on this slope. This was all washed away, and so it was all subsoil. It was a big orange scar. No weeds, even.
It took us a good 8 years to prepare this slope, and we're still working on it, this particular one.
So really, ecological restoration has happened to this site.
Yes.
And then, over time, what will the nutrient needs, the replenishment needs for nutrients be for these plants?
Well, ideally, it would be a, you know, consistent addition of mulch and compost every year. I mean, in an ideal situation. And then if we found a person who was willing to do compost tea again, which we haven't been able to find, that would be a 4 times a year occurrence, or 6 times a year, or ideally 12 times a year occurrence.
As a soil drench, as a foliar feed?
Both. Yeah, both. And then, of course, we feed them with this meat meal from Oahu, and spirulina and oyster shell. We top dress with that throughout the year, depending on how much time and available materials we have.
Mm-hmm. With so many different choices of calcium amendment, I'm curious to know why you chose oyster shell over dolapril or calpril or dolomite or these kind of things.
I like it because it breaks down slower, you know, it breaks down fairly slow.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, you know, like calfos, it comes in little tiny balls, and the chickens just love to eat that, and it doesn't, it breaks down even slower. And so we use that in our soil prep, but not throwing it down.
Got it.
Everything has to run. We have to run everything through the chickens first. Are they going to eat it? Can we put mulch down without them disturbing it, or compost down? The answer is usually No, they're going to eat it. And yes, we have to put logs around everything that we've just composted.
Right.
To keep the chickens out.
Well, I see with this wonderful collection of palms here as we were walking through the garden that Bill was ahead of us picking up the fallen fronds, which I would imagine happens on a daily basis.
Daily.
And so that's such a beautiful way to cover beds as well.
We use that
to keep the chickens off.
Yeah, it just doesn't last as long as logs. If
right.
we have logs, we use those first.
Yep.
And then our backup is palm fronds.
Mm-hmm.
This landscape now is 16 years old, is that right?
Maybe 14
yeah.
years old.
Yeah, we started in 2002. Michael's just started down by the creek. All we wanted was a picnic area and a path. And it just kept going.
Yeah, well, Bill kept pushing it along.
Right.
I went, okay, now this looks nice. You guys can get down here nice and easy. And what about over here?
It's true. Bill couldn't leave any area unexplored. He just wanted to see what does it look like under all those weeds? Let's find out.
So sometimes we're asked, you know, how the gardens, because there's so many different aspects to the gardens, different little pockets, and how it was master planned and everything because of all the different elevations. We actually just did one little section at a time of the garden. It would take anywhere from a month or two, sometimes to a year to work on one section of the garden. Most of the time, we thought that was going to be the last part of the garden.
Every time. Every time.
This was the final phase of the garden, you know.
So that when you're planting in that kind of situation, you think, okay, this is the last we're going to do, so then you can plant X or Y or Z because we're not planting up or down from this planting area. And so then when we would do a new area, all of a sudden everything that we had in the previous area is now jeopardized to a certain degree with light factors and root aspects. And so it requires some unusual pruning opportunities.
And the pruning is going to be a large part of the management of the garden over the next 20 years?
I would say it's just a continual, it's a continual aspect of the gardens. When you have this many trees and there's so much growing under the trees that, yeah, you have to allow for light factors, which is going to be the hugest thing, I think, down the road.
This is In the Garden on the Farm, and we're listening to Michael Wise and Bill and Lucy Robertson talk about the Princeville Botanical Garden here on the North Shore of Kauai.
One thing I want to say, though, Paul, is Bill and Lucy didn't start out to make botanical garden, like a lot of botanical gardens, of course. It's totally privately funded. Bill and Lucy funded the garden from day one. They still have to put money in. There's no trust funds supporting the garden. There's no benefactors shooting money into it. It's all been Bill and Lucy the whole entire time. And now that we have the tours, it's cut down on some of the money, but it's still, they have to kick in most months. So it's a beyond a labor of love.
But clearly that.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly that there's so much love that just radiates out of this place,
mm-hmm.
what's been done, what is continuing to be done in relationship with the plants and the landscape. It's truly inspiring. Michael, for you, when it got to that transition point where it was moving from you knowing that you were caring for a private landscape to now it's going to be open for tours and it's going to be a real botanical garden, what was that like for you?
All I could think of, since I'm just basically a plant geek, you know, I'm not a trained botanist or anything. All that meant to me was more plants. I could buy more plants. It just came down to that, actually. A pretty selfish attitude, I realized. But yeah, I wanted to blow the people away. I wanted people to cry or to have, you know, get the shakes or to really look at, you know, a beautiful garden can bring up so much stuff. You can it can cause self-reflection and cause you to slow down and actually look at your own life. It can transform what you want to be doing for the next decade or whatever. It's inspiration was paramount in my mind. Mm-hmm. Just open people up to the mother.
Mm-hmm. We first met Michael probably sometime around 1987 or 1988, right? In San Diego. Even back then, Michael had a reputation in San Diego of creating beautiful gardens. In, you know, all over San Diego, you know, North Park, Pacific Beach, North Pacific Beach, La Jolla, Rancho Santa Fe. There's a few times where Michael invited us to go to one of his job sites. Prior to that time, I didn't understand what all the talk was about Michael's gardens. And then this one garden we went to up in La Jolla at lunchtime one time, it was like, oh, yes, this is all about Michael's passion about creating wonder in people's backyards that is off the scale on what anyone else was doing in San Diego at the time. So that was our first introduction to Michael and what he did. So when we came over to Kauai, we bought this land in 2001. Michael had just visited the islands and decided he was going to move here. And so this was his, probably one of his main jobs for a number of years. He just focused 3 to 4 days a week, and we slowly just started working on different parts of the garden. My inspiration came after clearing a section of the garden, is walking away from the clearing part and then looking at it in a month or 6 months later, what Michael created with the different plants and rocks, and quite remarkable and unbelievable the results of that, of his efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much architecture to the garden. And the arrangements of plants, the use of stones. Is this something you've studied formally, or how did it come to you to have such an exquisite sense of space and placement?
Well, that's a debatable, depending on who you talk
that's
to.
That's my judgment, anyway, and that's obviously Bill and Lucy's judgment. So.
Just paying attention to the earth and spending 3 or 4 months a year backpacking and hanging with nature. And getting inspired by the beauty of the backcountry. I have no idea. I mean, the plants talk to me. They tell me if they want food, they tell me where they want to be planted. I don't really do anything other than grunt and sweat and haul things around. It's the plants that are pretty much in charge of my brain for the most part.
Awesome. So we talked about the differences in seasons here, and people who are new to Hawaii are surprised that we have a winter and we have a summertime and that there are these variations, and that here, because of the topography, there's a great difference in terms of light factors, shade and sun, full sun, but there's also the flowering calendar in terms of particular plants that go into bloom at particular times of the year. So for people who are looking at the calendar, what are some of the major attractions that you see coming into bloom or doing other things during the time of different times of year here?
What are some of the
different plants that people could see featured in the summer as opposed to the winter, that kind of thing?
Well, the cobelia is probably the stunner for the summertime. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't bloom until September usually, I think it is. That is an insanely beautiful tree. Mostly the trees are what turn me on in the flowering modes. Summertime, the silkfloss tree, Floriza speciosa, cobelia. Pretty soon we're going to be having that schizolobium in bloom. There's a nice progression of trees constantly going through their process. And then, you know, the small shrubs. They're coming, you know, they're really coming into their own right now. Portlandia, grandiflora, endangered plant from Jamaica. Just starting to bloom, we have two species of those. But yeah, it's set up, and it wasn't set up by anything that I did, I don't think. But there's flowers going up every day of the year.
Yeah, all year. There's a stemadina that 360 days of the year is dropping these beautiful white, lovely scented flowers. So there's always a carpet of the blossoms under the trees. So there's, you know, there are seasons to some of our plants, but something's always blooming.
And Lucy put in probably 30 varieties of orchids, so there's always orchids going off. Right now, that Mother's Day orchid is just starting to rock, and it's fragrant. It's such a beauty this year. But yeah, there's a lot of flowering plants that are on the list still.
One of the things I think about the garden is that it is a hidden gem. Mm-hmm. It's not on the beaten track. And so it's a bit of a prize just to drive up and find the place and see that it's nestled in a, of course, beautiful North Shore Kauai, but otherwise somewhat nondescript part of the residential area of the North Shore. And so people are finding out about this garden. How, and for people who are listening, how can they... Because it's not the kind of garden you can just drive up to. You have to make an appointment to be here. It's not a garden you walk through alone, but you have a tour guide. And that is a great benefit. I just was on a tour last week, and Heidi did such a beautiful tour. Mm-hmm. Her enthusiasm, her knowledge of the plants, that really contributed to my appreciation of the garden as well.
Mm-hmm.
So how do people get... an opportunity to visit this garden?
You can go online and look at the website, which is PrincevilleBotanicalGardens.com. And also you would call 808-634-5505, and you'll talk to Harold or Bill, and you make a reservation with them. And it is true, there's just 3 days a week right now that we do tours, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Mm-hmm. And in the morning at 9:30, and Tuesday and Thursday in the afternoon at 2. And it is a three-hour walking tour. So you get a lot of knowledge, and we also have a cacao orchard that is in the perfect spot in that it's shaded and all, it's at the bottom of one of the valleys, the Sacred Valley, I call it. And so people, when they are on tour, they spend the middle of the tour learning about how to make chocolate and tasting chocolates from around the world. I did used to make chocolate, but it's quite a process, which you'll learn. And so you still get to taste our beans. We kind of make a drink that something more like what the Aztecs would have done. And so that's, you're walking, and then you get to sit and enjoy chocolate and fruits. Yeah, so that's how you would reach us. You would call 808-634-5505, and you can also book online.
The story is getting old.
Well, that was a wonderful journey to the Princeville Botanical Gardens. I want to thank Bill and Lucy Robertson so much, and Michael Wise, somebody I admire very much, his relationship with plants, his ability to share it with people through the plantings at the Botanical Garden. And once again, for more information, can be found at PrincevilleBotanicalGardens.com. Speaking with Bill, he really so appreciates the fact that many visitors to the island wind up visiting his garden, but he would love to see more Kama'aina be able to appreciate all of the hard work they've done over the many years there. So he's putting out a special invitation to the Kama'aina to consider coming, whether it's for a first time or a return visit, to just come and appreciate the work that they've done. And I'm certainly grateful that this Kama'aina here took the time to do so. Harold, Heidi, everybody on the staff there, the other tour guides, thank you so much for opening your doors to us and giving us some more insight into the beautiful gardens there. Princeville Botanical Gardens. Wow. An inspiring place for sure. Just a couple of moments left for the show today. I want to let you know about a couple of upcoming events. Starting this evening, it's the Hawaii Farmers Union United meeting. And it's held tonight, Wednesday, April 13th, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse, beginning with a 6 p.m. potluck meal. And then starting at 6:30, we'll have presenters Eric Hansen of the Go Farm Hawaii training program will update us about the new program coming up and successes of farmers' training programs on Kauai, and hopefully the successes of people who've been through those programs. Don Heacock, who is the Hawaii Farmer United, the Hawaii Farmers Union United Vice President and State Aquatic Biologist, will give a PowerPoint presentation on designing and the requirements for sustainable ecological farming in Hawaii. And he sure knows a lot, Don Heacock, so that'll be very, very engaging. There'll be chapter announcements. There is an agrotourism initiative that we'll hear more about. There's land availability for farmers in Kalepa and indigenous microorganism. Korean natural farming new products will be discussed as well at tonight's meeting of the Hawaii Farmers Union United, more commonly referred to as the Kauai Farmers Union. Also, we have a Kauai County General Plan update meeting coming up next Tuesday from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. The focus of this discussion or this session is agriculture, and it's going to be held at the county planning building there at 4444 Rice Street in Lihue. For more information, you can go to plankauai.com. And for all of us ecological farmers out there, we know how important our work is. We need to, it's my opinion that it's best to share that with the decision makers on this island. This general plan update doesn't come along very often, and they're recognizing agriculture as a key component. As we know, there's all different kinds of agriculture happening here on Kauai, and I know I'm going to be there with some friends to support ecological farming, and I would hope to see some of my friends there as well. So that's coming up next Tuesday from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. And at 6 p.m., there is a meeting of the Eco Roundtable, and Gordon Labetz is helping to host that, started by Malama Kauai many years ago, and it's been a while since we've had an Eco Roundtable. So an opportunity for people who are doing ecological work on the island to share about their different activities with that group. So it's happening Tuesday, April 19th at 6 p.m. at the Lihue Neighborhood Center. So you're encouraged to bring literature from your nonprofit organizations or other ecologically based initiatives to share with others. And speakers will have 3 to 5 minutes to present your activities. And first come, first serve in terms of getting on the agenda there. And then a bunch of networking as well. So please stay tuned to KKCR now for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy until 3 o'clock. And thanks so much for tuning in to In the Garden on the Farm. I'll be back next week, and we'll be discussing more of our love of the Aina here. And looking forward to sharing that time with you. Aloha.